start now, it's not a tech.
Flying your blind, cause I can't tell.
Everything on my other screen.
If who wants to talk?
Okay, yeah, it's all yours, I'm lying, I'm not on the phone with this.
Oh, right, good point.
Okay, it's 10 after 6, we now have a quorum, we'll call this meeting to order. Has everybody had a chance to read the minutes? Any add-in or subtractions to them? If not, motion to approve?
So moved.
Moved, second?
Yes, second.
Moved and second, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, they are approved.
Melinda, Esmeralda, second?
Wait, oh, I thought Sam seconded, maybe I got some other.
No, no.
Whatever.
I hear to my left.
I heard it on my right, sorry.
Okay. Let's move to introduction to officer.
Okay, today we have Officer Tom Lekas. Officer Lekas, if you could come up to the first podium here and pick the seat of your choice. You do not have to be sworn in. So Officer Lekas has been with us almost 14 years, provides a lot of services for us. You may recognize him, he was our school resource officer up until recently. Tom's also one of our field training officers and just what we like to refer to as all-around good guy. So we'll let Officer Lekas give a quick introduction, answer any questions.
So, been doing this 13 years and 7 months, I'm not really counting, but I love what I do. I'm exactly where I wanna be at this point in my life. I'm field training officer, I'm also the coordinator for the FTEP system, so I coordinate the new officers that come in, what they do, where they go, and how they do it. Did a lot, part of a lot of other things, the mountain bike team, we did a lot of helmets this year, so I do a lot of the helmet fitting for the kids. For the last 3 years, I think, I've done the helmet fitting and the, what was it called, then we did the National Night Out. Love doing that, anything that has to do with the community, I'm there. I love my picture being taken, anything, a video, I'll be there, I'll be the person. They call on me when they need something done on social media, so I'm there to do it.
Yeah, I noticed that about the photos. National Night Out, what, every third photo he was in?
He pushes others out of the way.
Any questions of our officer?
What'd you think about your position as a school resource officer? Do you think we need it? Why do you think we need it?
So.
Some thoughts.
Being partial, having done it for 3 years, absolutely, I think it's extremely important, and it's, there's so many different levels. You start with the introduction when kids starting, just even in kindergarten moving up, they start seeing a police officer, not the typical cop, but an actual police officer as a resource, as somebody they can look up to. They see me, I mean, for the middle school, every, the beginning of the 3 years that I did it, I was helping kids with their locker combinations for 2 days in a row, in the very first 2 days. All the kids moving up from Sam Case in the middle school, they watched a video on how to do the lockers. They didn't know what they were doing. By that second day, I had a line of kids following me to help them with their lockers. I forgot my own locker combination when I came here to dress down. But the point is they saw me as so many different levels. They saw me, somebody they could talk to. By the third year, they were coming into my office disclosing things that they wouldn't normally disclose to me. It was great. They saw me at a level of somebody they could just talk to. We had classes where I was, it was a boys group. We did twice a week. I was in that boys group with them, and they felt comfortable with me. They talked about anything and everything, and I was able to share with them too on the same level as they were sharing. So it gives them a different perspective of what we do and who we are. We're not just out there in cars taking people to jail. They see that we actually have lives too, and we wear pants and shoes just like they do. Especially with, you know, the soccer I do this, I'm going to my 7th year of coaching. That's recognized too with the kids within the school. It's highly recognized, and they, you know, it's hard to stop them from calling me Officer Lekas to Coach Tom or Coach Lekas, you know, they wanna continue that, but they see policing in a completely different light. But I think it's extremely important that we are in the schools. Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Any other questions?
I've got one, my usual one. Why do you think it's difficult to recruit officers and keep them? Why is it so difficult right now?
I hate politics. I don't like to get into them, but I think that has a lot to do with it. And people are just worried about being a police officer right now. They're worried about putting the patch on their shoulder or the badge on their chest. They believe they become a target. And I think in the larger cities, that's the biggest problem. You know, and for just us and who we are in Newport, I think part of it is just unemployment pays a lot of money. And that could be part of it. If I ask myself all the time, would I start now knowing what's going on and I was never a police officer before, would I still want to be? That's a difficult question. It's always been in my heart and I would say yes, because I haven't seen those the negative in this community. I still have people stopping and saying, thank you for your service. I mean, it's constant and I love it. That means the most to me when people in the community do that. And that tells me we have support. So I guess I'm kind of biased when I say, yes, I would still want to be a police officer at this time. But I don't think a lot of the public sees that. And I think that might be a misconception to most people who want to become a police officer. Maybe that's just something they see. And to stay here, it's difficult because we are a small community. A lot of the younger people we get here, they want to do more. They want to be a part of more action. Well, I mean, it's Newport. We don't have a whole ton of action here. They want to be busier in other cities. So, I mean, and I think that's always been the way since I've been here for 13 years. We've always had people come and go, especially the younger crowd. Can I answer your question?
That does. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any more questions?
Yeah. So the city council engaged the chief for the next 2 weeks with unlimited funding.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of changes and what would you do with it?
Oh, boy. Well, first, I'd give the option of a different uniform. I'd like to go to a polo shirt with an under vest. That's the first thing I'd love to say is, hey, give everybody a choice. From there, boy, I would not be able to sit here and make too many decisions without thinking them through first, because any decision I make now could destroy or change something else that's working good for us. So to be honest with you, I can't. I'd love to sit here and give you these ideas, but it's not...
Any resources that you don't have that you'd like to have?
Wow. Well,
raise,
huh?
A raise, you know? Maybe.
See, it's not fair because to me, money isn't the big deal. Yeah. That's not what keeps me here. Oh. It's the community service, the community policing that keeps me here, the ability to do what I do in my car. That's what keeps me here. I mean, yeah, I'd love to get 32-inch monitors for all us report writing guys, you know, and faster computers, and everybody have their own car that goes home with them, take home cars. I'd love to see that. Love to see a bigger department, as in a bigger place that we can go to, you know, a lot more room, because we're running out of room, you know. Yeah, I mean, without having time to really think through things, being chief is not simple. Those choices you make can corrupt other things that are going on. They're working really well. I wouldn't want to do that because we've got a lot of good things going on.
Okay. Any other questions?
I think Stu.
Yeah, I have a question. I'm Stu from Newport here north, and I'm going to ask about, I'm from the phone, and I'm going to ask about the neighborhood watch programs. I just kind of got here a couple of years ago, and I'm starting this Neighborhood Watch Facebook page up, and I'm wondering what the current status of and the way you feel like it should be, if it's not, you know, positive right now, get the Neighborhood Watch going in our community. My question is about the status of it today and where do you think it should go from here?
Well, the Neighborhood Watch, there's nothing negative about it. It's positive. I think the Neighborhood Watch should be run by the neighborhoods themselves. And then the community policing that we do, we would be a part of that. So once a Neighborhood Watch establishes themselves, like San Bayo used to have, it was really strong. I loved it because every person had everybody's addresses and everybody's phone numbers and knew everybody. They had a sheet. Mm-hmm. I could contact anybody in that neighborhood and we could, it was unlimited what we could do and who we could find. And so I think our part of it would be once they're established, we just do our community policing. We are part of any meetings they have. You know, if they have questions about law enforcement, what we're doing or who we are, that's, they should be asking for one of us to show up and let us be a part of that. You know, is for, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, would you be in favor of reaching out to you and organizing some of these meetings in the separate areas of our neighborhoods and seeing if we can scare up some neighborhood watch captains?
Absolutely. That's one of my favorite things to do is to be a part of the community, actually. And so that would be awesome if communities started getting involved and then reach out to me. I would love to be a part of that. As long as my supervisor and chief are okay with it, absolutely.
Okay, great. And what is your first name and last name? I don't think I caught it on the phone.
First is Thomas, common spelling, and the last is Lekas, L-E-K-A-S.
Thank you.
Yep.
Any other questions?
I'll go ahead and ask one. First, I'll just say thank you for your service, just to make sure that's heard, that you hear that from us. And a couple of years ago, we the community, and I'm seeing Sheriff Landers here, so this is kind of related, we didn't pass, I think, was it a levy? I'm kind of looking at Sheriff Landers, that was about public safety. And this fall, we are looking at passing a food and beverage tax to help increase the force, the police force, and hire more officers. And I'm just wondering, like, how would you articulate that to people who don't understand that this is actually about public safety at the end of the day? It's really not so much about what your food and beverage tax bill is. It's really about ensuring public safety in the community. How would you articulate that argument?
It's difficult, not really a politician, but you know, you look at it, you gotta think, first of all, if we're asking people, and stop me if I'm wrong, if we're asking people for food tax for more officers, the issue I see is we're already down 5 or 6.
Right.
So is that money to help us get more 5 or 6 or get more on top of the 5 or 6 that we're already down? That's the issue. And I think people are going to look at it saying, well, if you can't hire officers, why are we paying an extra amount of money for more if we can't hire the ones we need already? You know, see what I'm saying? I think it's coming too early. I think we need to be the department needs to be pretty much full of officers first and then ask for money for more officers. Unless I'm getting it completely wrong. That's the way I
how I hear you
it.
Saying it is that we don't need more. I think what we're trying to articulate is that we need this funding to ensure public safety, to continue to protect and serve in the community. I recognize we are down in terms of numbers of sworn officers. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, how do you articulate, like, we need people to really understand this on the ballot? You know, that this is about, you know, there were a lot of people who lobbied very hard to keep the school resource officer. And we had to make really hard decisions about where we put our priorities. And that didn't mean being in the schools at that time. So I'm just trying to figure out, like, if we got more money, we could, you know, really fill out potentially, right? There's still gonna be recruitment issues, still employment issues, but I'm just wondering, like, if you had an argument for how we articulate this, because I think it has to come from the community, people who are serving in those roles. Like, we want you to fund the police force.
Right. Anything past that, I wouldn't know how to bring it towards them. You know, we're hurting already. I mean, I don't know how you would push that forward. They know. I mean, the community, I think we have a great following, and I think the community loves us. I really do think that. I don't know. I can't answer that in full without more information and more knowledge of exactly where that money is going to go and what it's going to do. And personally, I don't really want to know. I like being right where I'm at and doing what I do. That's too much for me to deal with, to be honest with you.
We want to fund more people in your department.
And I'd love to have more people.
That's really the message.
Problem. Yeah, and getting them is the issue. If we could figure out how to get a billboard up saying, hey, come work here. This is why, you know, get our pictures out of the things that we do, the positive stuff, the role models of the department, and show them how they're working and go about it. I think that'd make a difference. You know, I think a lot of the community sees the negative stuff, and they need to see there's more positive. We do way more positive than negative, really. So I think the more that people see that, especially the younger crowd, I think easier it will be to get more applicants in. It's just, it has to get out there somehow.
Thanks.
As I understand, this is on food and beverage. So that means tourists will be paying.
And locals, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of your interaction is with tourists, mm-hmm. people who don't Absolutely. Live here. And so, you know, people need to understand that. That it's just not the residents, it's those who demand the service. And people from outside the city, outside the state, they use the services. So I think that's a good approach. My comment. Any other questions?
Tom, thanks for coming. You know, I always ask the officers, you know, if they'll come. They're not made to. And of course, they always say yes. And I'm like, it's real simple. They ask you a couple simple questions. I might have to change my approach a little bit. Your guys' questions seem to get harder and harder. By the last officer, it might be an inquisition. So thank you for taking time, Tom.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on. Lincoln County Mental Health Program.
So I just to clarify, I had asked Chair Simon if he would move the sheriff up just in respect of his time. There was some discussion. I missed the last meeting, but looking at the minutes and then talking with our staff, there was some discussion about Lincoln County Mental Health, and I figured the sheriff was a much better resource than me to tell you just what I know, which is not enough. So Sheriff graciously agreed to come, and what I did promise Peggy, if anybody that talks, make sure your little red light's on and you talk directly into the microphone. We just had a little bit of problems picking up some of the voices last time.
Well, good evening. I'm Curtis Landers, Lincoln County Sheriff. I guess, can I have the I'm a chief for a day question too? I would like to. Sorry, chief. but yeah, that was very difficult questions. I thought he was going through a job interview for a minute there, but he handled it very well. So I'm a little worried though, coming second behind that though. I looked at the agenda, I looked at your minutes, and I actually tried to view the video just to kind of see where be a little bit more prepared, and the voices were hard to pick up when I was watching the video, but I think I get the general nature of what the conversation is, because Lincoln County's mental health program is big. And I'm not the HHS director who oversees Lincoln County's mental health program, but as far as how it relates to law enforcement, I can give you basically my opinion on that. And I think I'll start maybe with a little bit of background as I know it. Again, a lot of this is opinionated by me, kind of how we got into the situation we're at, because it's not a great situation for mental health, especially with law enforcement, with jail beds. And so I'm going to kind of start where back when I started, and I know the chief, back in the late 80s, early 90s, the move was to build more prison beds, more jail beds. The current Lincoln County Jail at its capacity was built in 1992. A lot of state prison beds were built in the 90s. It was more of the warehousing people, lock people away. That's going to solve the problem. That's going to reduce the crime rate. And as that happened, a lot of the state beds for individuals with mental illness went down. And I remember working patrol back in that time. And I remember if we encountered somebody in crisis, we could do a peace officer's hold, which you probably heard of. And basically it was a quick stop at the hospital, and then we transported them to the Damish State Hospital over in Wilsonville. At the time, officers, myself, complained that we had to drive somebody all the way over there and drop them off. But now that problem has exaggerated to where we don't take them anywhere. We take them to our local hospital, and then we sit for hours on end waiting for a bed to open up, or wait for the person to be stabilized, or wait for drugs and alcohol to get out of someone's system. And so it took a problem that we complained about back then, where it was where somebody, we actually took somebody to where they were getting help, where they were getting treatment, they were entered into the system. And it was actually the officers that were doing that hold back then. They were initiating the report, And really the stop at the hospital was just to ensure they were safe for transport to go to the Danville State Hospital. So it really had very little contact with someone from Lincoln County Mental Health, and we were getting the individuals the help that they needed. Again, those beds went down, damage closed, other facilities closed, and what we started seeing, again, in my opinion, is we would encounter someone in crisis, we would take them to the hospital, we had long, lengthy delays, we would find out that there wasn't a bed available, and so that person didn't get the help they needed. They were, we brought them back into the community, and what I believe a lot of officers were doing, not just it locally, but around the country and specifically around the state, is we were, usually someone in crisis in that situation, there's some type of criminal activity that you could charge someone with. So what was happening is individuals were being brought to jail because it was a lot quicker for the officer. It was, again, a drop-off point. We knew what was going to happen, went to the hospital. It wasn't a good environment. It wasn't good for the individual. It wasn't, the officer was going to be there for a long time. So jails around the state started filling up with individuals that had mental illness, substance use disorder, other behavioral issues. And I believe in the 90s, that's what contributed to the problem that we're working with now. And then, as I progressed and got into leadership positions and saw that, now we need to address this problem. How can we address it? And it was, a difficult decision or a difficult problem to come up with decisions, again, without funding, resources, this type of thing. And what do we need to do? So when I became sheriff in 2016, I saw that there was, obviously this problem had been going on. It was building. Now, before that, I was blaming the state. It's the state's problem. They need to fix it. And then realized that, no, we need to handle this locally if we're going to address it at all. And so, a couple of indicators that we had a significant problem. Just by walking through the jail, you could tell we had a significant problem because there are several people in there that had not just mental illness or other behavioral issues, but chronic, significant mental illness. At any given time, our mental health counselor, Dennis Buckmaster, estimates that there's 30% of people with a behavioral health issue in our jail, and 10% of those is significant. And when I mean significant, this is a person that requires almost constant staff time to interact with, and obviously, when somebody's we don't have the resources, we don't have the facility to treat somebody with mental illness. A jail environment just has somebody deteriorate. They just go downhill once they're in a correctional facility because we don't have that facility to address that. So I was looking at that, and I also looking at the number of forced releases that we had. We were at a high point. We had over 700 individuals that were being forced released from our jail here locally in Newport. And when I say forced release, I mean that there are individuals that weren't serving their full sentence that the judge was imposing on, or they were in release pre-trial before they actually went through their entire process. Even if a judge wanted them held through the entire process, we were under the case law, the sheriff can release individuals even if the judge wants them held or sentenced if it's a population issue. So we are releasing individuals back out in the community. We were trying to pick the right person to release back out in the community without having any risk assessment tools that I'll talk about a little bit later. And that was a difficult decision for our staff because what we're seeing is just a severe revolving door. And how that relates to mental illness is the people in that revolving door usually had mental illness, they had substance use disorder, something going on. So I'm like, okay, so I see the problem. How do we address it? And it really comes down to treating, diversion programs, diversionary programs, any type of program that can keep people out of jail, to begin with, is a significant improvement because that will reduce that revolving door. And we did a couple of what are called our sequential intercept mapping, SIMs. We have done two of those now. The last one was in 2019. And what a sequential intercept map does is it brings a bunch of partners together. It brings the hospital, it brings law enforcement, it brings dispatch, it brings parole and probation, the courts, mental health, program providers. Everybody gets into this room and we start throwing out not only what the problem is, but what can that person offer to the challenge? Because before that, everyone's sitting in a silo, and we might be able to address it this way, and somebody else might be able to address it this way, but how can we collectively address the problem? And so what we gain out of a day and a half of those sequential intercept mapping is that basically a map that shows us and provides us with guidance and suggestions of how we can improve. And the whole goal is on this intercept map, it's a 0 to 5, and 0 starting with that initial call to dispatch or initial encounter with law enforcement. How can we divert somebody from the criminal justice system into something else that actually helps them? That actually, you know, provides them, you know, because the whole goal is, you know, we know that 90-some percent of people that get arrested, that go to jail, are going to eventually get back out. So, you know, again, talking about that warehousing people in the 90s, where we were just warehousing them, you know, obviously, but the thing is, the problem is that the crime went down. Violent crime went down, but we weren't really correcting the problem. We were just creating a revolving door because while it was down, more people were in. More people were going in, and what some indicators that I've learned from conferences and education, just statistics in general, is the longer someone spends in jail, the likelihood of them reoffending when they get out significantly goes up. And I'm not talking about years; I'm talking about days. The statistics show that at day 4, if someone is in their 20s, first or second arrest, has a job, has family support, they get arrested, and at day 4. They're 50% likely to reoffend once they get back out in the community. So I'm hearing these things, and it's like, okay, we've created the problem. And so we know that diversion and getting someone out, getting somebody into treatment, we know that using risk assessment tools to identify who should get out is important too, because there are a lot of people that should be in jail because they are a risk to the community. And it's really identifying who should be in there and who should be out. And, you know, that's when we and Councilor Hall talked about our taxing measure that we had on the ballot. One of the programs that we had in there was to start a pretrial program and follow pretrial justice bail reform. And it didn't pass, but as I was going through, and one of the things when I went to our county budget team the next year, one of the things that I knew is that was going to, if I was going to get any positions at all, I knew that was significantly going to help us in, as a community, address this problem with the limited resources we have. If I would have asked for 2 deputies, it would have been great. We'd have been out there. We'd have taken more calls, but we weren't addressing any problems. Again, just putting more Band-Aids on it and not really addressing the problems. So I went to the budget committee, and we were fortunate enough to be granted the 2 positions for a pretrial. And it really has snowballed into a lot larger program to where we were able to successfully receive grants that now we have a pretrial counselor that talks to everybody that comes in. And again, trying to find that earliest indicator of someone that can get into treatment, get into help, and really guide them into that. And that's what pretrial really does. They interview everybody that comes into custody. They determine their risk assessment, whether or not they're a good candidate to be released back in the community or someone that should stay. The whole goal is to make sure that our community is still safe, that someone is going to show up for court, and they're not going to reoffend if they are released. Those are really the 3 things that pretrial is looking for. If they are a good candidate to be released, then they basically add a little monitoring component, depending on what it is, depending what the judge orders. That could be as simple as they just check in once a week, or really limited. We have learned that people that don't require a lot of monitoring shouldn't have a lot of monitoring, because otherwise it's just somebody being nitpicky, and it has the reverse effects to it. So we want to do just that amount of monitoring that is effective. Another thing that's been an excellent tool is to have the phone reminders, just like I do for my dentist, so I don't forget to go to my dentist. You know, the dentist calls up a week before, says, you got an appointment coming up, and we do that. And we issue the phones if we need to so that someone knows that they're going to show up. This has had a significant improvement to the problem that we're doing with the identifying who should be out, who should get in programming. And I know that because pretrial started, let's see, in 2000, and COVID with my years with COVID, 18 months is just for some reason I'm trying to put that behind me, but it's still here. But we started with one person, I believe it was in 2018. Second person started shortly after 19. And we were down to, in the first 3 months before COVID substantially hit, and we had to really change our operating procedures at the jail, we had had one forced release in the year 2020, and that was on New Year's Day from a New Year's Eve arrest. Other than that, our population, which we have a max population in our jail of 161, again, if we're always full before this, I was coming in looking daily at the roster, and we were in the 130s, we were in the 120s. We were managing this population that we had, and again, it initially when I looked at that problem of forced releasing, I guess there's two directions. I could go and say, well, we need more beds, or we can try to address and effectively manage the beds that we had, and I chose that route, and it was working. COVID has had a whole different effect because we've had to do different things for quarantine and other intake procedures that we've had to do. But we knew that was working. And again, having a pretrial counselor, we also started our COMET team, which is our Community Outreach and Mental Health Enhancement Team. That was started in March of 2020, actually, during COVID. In fact, when we were gauging up to start that, I was like right in the middle of COVID, but we proceeded with it. And that is something that I've been advocating for during this process too. I knew that that was gonna be very valuable. I've heard how it worked in other communities and what it is. If you don't know, it's basically pairing up a police officer with a mental health counselor to, in our case, we were not responding to the crisis in progress because we only had one team countywide. But we were basically trying to prevent crisis from happening to begin with. And what we were doing, how we were doing that is this team would review reports, we would review calls that came in that might not have been criminal activity, but maybe a little different in nature, maybe a little suspicious. An example, somebody just, a neighbor calls in, says, my neighbor was screaming in the street at middle of the night. Well, that's not criminal to nature, but it's something to take a look at and see. So the team would go out and talk with these individuals and determine if there was where they could direct them to. That was started in March of 2020. We had to suspend it January of this year because we had the mental health counselor went on maternity leave. So that suspended it, and we were just waiting for her to come back. But ultimately, during that time, she took another position, didn't come back. And so when I was working with behavioral health to get somebody else in there because the program was very successful, to date, I believe it was 140, almost 150 referrals they had made during that short period of time. And it's always difficult to gauge how many people they were keeping out of custody. But how many incidents didn't they? But I could almost look at that being probably at least half of them, those people were staying out of custody because they were really addressing the high frequency individual, the people again in that revolving door that will have those 3 to 4 arrest cycles per year or more, and really getting them the help they need and finding programming that worked for them. So they were really helping. The comments and the praise were coming in from police departments, from citizens, just couldn't believe how much success that program was having. So when this happened, it was just, and this year I actually told my supervisor, I said, we got to have this program up and running by June 1st again this year. And of course that hasn't happened, it's still been out. When I talked to mental health, and since then I've talked to the new director, Jane Romero, about this program because I think it's so valuable for the community. They also have their crisis teams that were a 24/7 team that were a resource for law enforcement, resource for the hospitals, that were just responding to individuals that were already in crisis. And they put a priority on filling spots in that program first before going back to COMET. So, and they still haven't even filled all those crisis team spots. So again, they're affected by the hiring problem that we're facing with law enforcement. I understand their priorities. I was trying to work around it. I even said, bring it to our office. We'll do it and try to hire for that position. Then you're not trying to hire for two programs. That was under a different director. I've already talked about this again with Director Romero and told her what a priority it was for me to get that program going again. And of course, her priority, she was just getting her feet wet. I probably hit her with a lot of things initially, and so I need to reestablish that communication again and see where we're at so we can get that going. It was such a priority for myself that, you know, we didn't get, it was actually Health and Human Services that got the grant funding to get that position, not the Sheriff's Office. And again, it was such a priority, we actually used one of our general fund patrol deputies, which we don't have enough of, to make that program happen. Again, I'm trying to look at, with the limited resources we have, what's gonna have the biggest bang for the buck? What's gonna do the best for the community? Again, that's why we, if we're gonna get two positions, we put them in pretrial, if we, you know, using this one position, because I think it's gonna reduce the calls for law enforcement. It's gonna reduce that crisis that law enforcement has to respond to. If it, again, if I go back to, if I have the unlimited resources or even a couple million dollars, I would put more teams of this out there. Because I'd also have the ones that do respond to crisis at, you know, in the, at 3 o'clock in the morning when somebody's in crisis, you know, somebody that's going to do it. The cohorts team that Eugene, I think, is a great program that we should look at bringing here. And I know there's going to be funding coming down through the state. Again, that's where it's really on the horizon. It looks like there's some possibilities of getting funding and being able to help. Another thing that I would do if I had funding, and kind of and going back to that conversation, something that I think is needed is also to establish a crisis center, whether it's regionally or locally. I think having a crisis center for officers, for walk-ins, to be able to go and stabilize, whether it's, again, whether it's a substance use disorder, mental illness, combination of the both, whatever it is, some place where they can go and get stabilized, you know, an alternative for law enforcement. Again, when we went through the sequential intercept mapping, we would talk about law enforcement, talk about the challenges they faced. And it was really down to take them to jail, take them to the hospital, or what do we do with them? And with limited choices like that, that neither one of them are good, having that crisis center would give another option for officers to do to get somebody stabilized. I was actually, and now I know it's a lot larger area, but down in Phoenix, I went down there for a conference on this, and they took us, they have a 72-hour crisis center there. And they were experiencing the same thing on a much larger scale, of course, that they were saying their officers were just taking people to jail instead of getting them treatment. And so their goal initially was to have a drop-off center where officers could go drop somebody off in 10 minutes or less and be back out on the road. And they've actually, when I was there, established their goal. It was actually a 7-minute average drop-off time for the officer. I toured it, amazing facility. They said it was only 10% funded by taxpayer dollars. The rest of it came from other resources. And I think we have the other resources to actually operate it. And but I think having that to build that bricks and mortar piece is what's needed. But I also, again, I think there's funding coming down through the state in the next 2 years, this year being one of them, that that can make that happen. And already been entering discussions. I've been talking with Benton County, with their commissioners, with their new sheriff, about establishing something maybe in Benton County for a Lynn Benton Lincoln type of response, to where, while it's not ideal that we still have that drive time, but it's still a location if we're not large enough to adequately staff and treat somebody here. I know in talking with Director Romero when she got here, that's one thing that she's noticed that we need. She came, I believe, from Pennsylvania. She talked about the resources that were there, that they had, the different things. I think she said that Pennsylvania was like number 7th in the nation as far as addressing mental illness with resources, and I think Oregon was like 49th. So you see the difference. So she's coming from a place that's had the resources and can see what they can provide. And she's thinking that we could even put something here. We have a couple pods at our jail that are not functioning for the jail. They were never intended to be part of the actual jail. They were work release. They are cells that have sheetrock in them, no toilets, and we can't use them for actually cells. And it's always been kind of a goal of mine to see that used for something similar to this. She looked at and she goes, well, you know, maybe we'll see how this money comes down, what the parameters are, and maybe we can use something there. You know, that some of the good things that we already have a 24/7 kitchen, we already have 24/7 staff at camera, so we have a lot of things as far as security already in place, but yet it's still completely separate from the from the jail side of things. So it would be beneficial. So some things that are some positive things that could be in the future that we need. Another program that we have that we started with a grant program is LEAD, which is our Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program. Again, trying to divert these individuals as early as possible. This gives police officers around our county an option if they counter somebody again. It could be somebody that has several arrest cycles. But if it's a drug violation or drug-related violation, trespass, something like this, they can offer at that time to put somebody into a program that immediately goes and starts addressing the barriers that's causing that person to commit crimes. And it's really a choice of the officer. It's not required. It's a choice of the individual to choose either to go to jail at the time or to accept this program. And there have been success with that. And when I say that, because I've talked to community members and they're like, oh my gosh, are they just gonna let that person go? And especially if they're a victim of crime and it's really a culture change. It was a culture change for me from, you know, I worked the road in the 90s. It was, you know, we were taught, you know, you do the crime, you do the time. I mean, that was really what, you know, you were measured on how many people you could take to jail. And, you know, times have really changed, but that whole culture, it clicked with me and different things that I've learned. Talking about it with our deputies, talking about with local law enforcement, you know, it's a culture change for them. It's a culture change for the community because someone's a victim of crime. They think somebody should pay the consequence. And we got to remember that everyone's innocent till proven guilty. And what I tell people is you really want, you want that person, which we shouldn't be punishing them. And again, when someone's pretrial, we're not intended punishing them. Again, we're establishing that they're, whether or not they're a risk to the community or not, not whether or not we're punishing. The judge can punish them by imposing a sentence if they're found guilty. And that could be that they stay in jail. But initially, that pretrial is not meant to be a punishment stage. It's meant to just keep the community safe. And so we have to remember that. And I talk about that with the victims. I said, so would you rather we do this? We put somebody in. And again, we're not talking about that they have to come back tomorrow or they come back next week to enter this program. It's 24/7 that we can talk, we can call reconnections, and somebody will come out, meet them, and initially start going through their assessment to determine what they need right then. And if they do have previous court cases, they have a navigator that works through those court cases with them. And the judges have seen, you know, excellent success with individuals because if it's, you know, getting them stabilized with medication, getting them stabilized as far as getting them off drugs and alcohol, and then come to court, the judge is a lot more lenient as far as, okay, this person's on the right track. Let's keep them on the right track. There's no sense taking a jail bed with this person. So I know the chief said 20 minutes, and I don't know. I can talk about this forever, just so you know. I'm very passionate about it. And I don't know if I've answered all the questions, but I'm sure you have more. There's a lot more I could talk about with bail reform pretrial that addresses this issue. But I want to give you a little, you know, there is some hope, I think, there if we can make some things happen with the crisis center and either locally or regionally. So I'm definitely working on that.
Okay. Anybody have any questions?
What did you say that your average population was?
Right now or?
Yeah.
Right now we're running around 100, but it's completely different because of COVID restrictions. We have to keep a couple pods for quarantine. I mean, we have, I think it's 3 individuals in there now that are COVID positive that we have to keep separate from everyone else, which means we have an entire pod that can only have 3 people in it when it's actually, so our population is 161. Right now, we're averaging about 100. But before COVID hit, we were in the 120s, 130s. And so we were definitely had room. It was effective for law enforcement because they could still bring somebody in, unlike they can do now, where it's really a cite and release for individuals because we won't accept people because we just can't with COVID. We have to keep all of our booking cells individually. And if we are full, we just, you know, they have to call and basically ask. And it's not ideal, but what I hope is once we get past COVID, we go back to the officers, can bring somebody in. I can talk about a little bit about Senate Bill 48, but what it's really gonna do is add another component to this because it's gonna allow the presiding judge to issue an order to us at the jail to basically do that risk assessment 24/7 instead of just when pretrial's there, so that we can address if someone should get out, you know, at 2 in the morning, they get arrested and come in. We can address it right then so they don't even have to wait till arraignment, and we can move those beds through even even quicker if we have the right candidate that's going to show up and not reoffend. So, you know, it was really surprising me, you know, being at a facility that was running at max 161 for so many years. Again, you know, if you do the math, if we're, you know, 161 and we force release 700, that's almost two a day that are getting out because we're at max, to once we put in pretrial, we were not doing that, and we were averaging population around 130, so.
And you're only mental health providers like the hospital?
Well, we have Lincoln County Mental Health, but if we encounter somebody in crisis, really the only place to take them is the hospital or jail, you know, after hours.
I think you'd be in crisis most of the time.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And then they have, you know, well, they previously had 24/7 crisis workers. They would come out to the scene, you know, if we needed them, they would get on the phone with us. We have a dedicated line for law enforcement to call them to help work. So that was definitely a significant improvement. And then adding in when we had a Comet, you know, those things were really, but just because of staffing, it went from 24/7 to, I think they're off at midnight now. And they are indicating they spend most of their time at the hospitals, not even with individuals that law enforcement are counting, but just with people that are coming into the hospital for whatever reason, family members or just turning themselves in.
And I guess I would foresee not only mental health, but then you got suicide risks and everything.
Right, right, yeah.
Impossible job.
It is, yeah, yeah. It sometimes it does, but again, I think with some of the programs that we're able to establish, it's helped. I do think that final piece, and there's probably more pieces, I think an essential piece is the crisis center to give officers another option when somebody's just in that significant crisis, because again, seeing that facility in Phoenix and how it worked, it was, you know, 72 hours where somebody could stay there. They would, they were getting treated, either stabilized or determined that they needed to go on to the state hospital if that was the case. Again, the state hospital has so limited beds. Just recently, I was talking about the chief about this, you know, you talk about our beds. We had an individual that was committed to the state hospital that was set to go. That was in February. And I believe that person, just within the last couple of weeks, they had a bed open that they could leave our facility and go there. So that person stayed at our facility where we aren't able to treat that person for that many months waiting for a bed once they were even committed.
Yeah.
Other questions?
No, and I can tell you, in growing up close to the same era, the sheriff is much older than I am, of law enforcement, is a few years ago when he started presenting these topics at our law enforcement administrators meeting, I know a lot of us that grew up in the same era were like, the sheriff has lost his mind.
That is true.
And it was. It was, okay, it's not that we're not supportive, but boy, just having a hard time grasping this. And as time has progressed and we actually can start seeing the results, you know, with people that needed help being able to get help and, you know, dealing, and as an officer, one of the most frustrating things is when you have somebody that needs a resource that you can't provide, that's frustrating. And, you know, this could take 6, 8, 10 hours of our shift while we sat there waiting for a resource. You know, this helped with that. But then also seeing, well, we do have a lot of repeat offenders, is we do have people that have seen the light, I guess, you know, have got the resources, got the help that they needed, you know, and then seeing less people offend or having that jail space again pre-COVID, people that needed to go to jail went to jail, and people that needed to stay in jail stayed in jail. So, you know, seeing that it worked firsthand was great to see. In listening, you know, I'm a lot more optimistic and a lot more supportive of, we don't call them the sheriff's crazy ideas anymore. You know, when they're proof positive and sitting through these meetings and they're showing the statistics and the facts, you have to be a believer. And then being able to see it, you know, so it is exciting to hear that he does have a plan. You know, it's one of those things, I know it falls on the county. I wish we all had the unlimited funding to be able to help support the county through funding, you know, through different avenues to kick this off more, make it look like this is a community project, not just, you know, funding from the sheriff's office or the county. So Curtis is a pretty good speaker. I'm sure he can get more money somewhere.
I was just going to make a comment. I do think it is kind of like the crazy ideas comments. It's like the paradigm shift in law enforcement. And from the you do the crime, you do the time, law and order, baby, to having a space to hold the concept of humanity and grace and empathy and compassion and recognizing like mental health is underfunded. It is, we already ostracize and marginalize folks with any kind of mental health conditions. So it makes sense that there might be other co-occurring things like substance abuse and other things like homelessness and, you know, chronic conditions. So to shift that to assessing what is a real risk and, you know, how, because those folks are living in our community. They're not living at Damish anymore. They're going to come right back into the community. So how do we lean in to provide more service and support as opposed to just penalize and, you know, throw them in a 10 by 10. So I think that's the piece that just needs more attention. I appreciate what you're doing to shift that.
Thank you.
It's not only a human factor, it's expensive to incarcerate someone.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
It is. In the community.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and one more success story maybe to leave on is we have the, I don't know if you heard it, we have the pretrial house that's just down from the jail. It's actually 9 beds that we are able to house individuals that maybe if it's housing is the issue that's keeping them in jail, because a lot of times before we had that, the judge would look at the risk and say, well, you have no housing, might as well stay in jail then, because if you just go back out in the community and you're homeless, you're going to reoffend more than likely. So that would take up a jail bed, but we have 9 beds now that are at the pretrial house. And that's been used extensively for those individuals. And we're actually in the process of painting that house, and the people that are living in there right now are helping paint it. And we have one of our sergeants that are down there working with them. I think this was like day 3 that he's been working pretty closely with them on this painting project. And he was telling me this morning that, you know, it was interesting. I got to know them, you know, great guys and stuff. But listening to their stories, he said, those are 3 people that are helping that are thankful for the opportunity they've had. That he's convinced, and they were convinced, that they would either be in jail, homeless, or reoffending if they didn't have that opportunity. And now they're on the right track, and we've seen several success stories coming out of that too. So again, just another success story to pass on that this is working. And I think that helps with that paradigm shift too, to show the success stories that people can change if they, you know, not everyone. I mean, I will admit that, but I also admit that during my career that there's some individuals that I won't name that I said would never change that I now see in peer support roles that have changed. And so I guess the moral of that story is don't give up on anybody. But there are still bad people out there. And again, you have to identify that by risk assessment tools to determine who should be in jail and who just needs to help with to stabilize and be on out in the community.
Okay. Thank
Sheriff,
you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you,
everyone.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, moving on. You've been sitting so patiently waiting.
With a bow tie on.
Come on up and take a chair there.
Oh.
Oh boy, he left the seat all hot and stuff already.
So as you know, we do have a vacancy that was the Latinx or the Latinx member, and Mr. Garza did apply for it. He was qualified based upon the criteria set for the committee, and so the general process is that our committee will interview based upon the questions here, and I would recommend starting on one side and just going through the questions. The committee ultimately makes the recommendation, and then based upon your recommendation, as they do serve at the pleasure of the appointment of the mayor. And so while this group can recommend, it is only the mayor that can appoint.
Okay. I'm gonna start with.
Okay. Your question. Police Advisory Committee is a relatively new committee. What do you know about this committee and its roles and responsibilities?
What was the second part of that?
What do you know about the committee and with its roles and responsibilities?
Sure. Well, the way I understand the role is to get as much information in and then turn around and share it with the community. In a nutshell, that's kind of how I understood it.
What are the unique strengths and qualities that you would bring to this committee?
Well, let's see here. I'm a medical interpreter, so when he was talking about mental health, I was following everything because I also work with DHS in town. So I bring that side, but I'm also trained in court interpretations. So that lingual stuff, I have it. I just don't use it as much because I've been working strictly with healthcare. So those qualifications makes the terminology not foreign for me, I suppose. Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. What motivates you to want to be a member of this community?
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole time that I've lived here in Lincoln County and so forth, I've been involved doing stuff for the community all along, whether it be working at the call center and so forth, and, or just helping people in general. But I've chose to do a lot of that stuff in private. So when this came up and I'm going over all the responsibilities, and Thomas, I kind of do this already when I interpret for these medical people, you know, Spanish and English. So again, it was really a natural move to me to want to apply for this because I think I could really add to your committee.
Okay.
Thank you.
What do you feel should be the Newport Police Department's policing and patrol priorities?
Well, I do like what Sheriff Landers was saying, taking into consideration the mental health of that, because there's just so many things that can go wrong when we're not prepared for those. So all along, I've really been impressed with the direction that Newport as a whole is taking, being proactive and being involved with the community and making it all inclusive. Really impressed with that stuff. I like it a lot.
Fernando, you just brought up all inclusive. And so this is a great next question for that. What steps could be taken to address underserved communities that are a part of the city of Newport?
I don't want to call it a benefit. An advantage I have with being a medical interpreter is I get to hear a lot of these things firsthand. They're telling me about their medical stuff, but it just soon turns to, well, this is happening at home. So just being around that enough, I'm prepared to listen to these people and to ask questions. And if it comes down to a simple, let's just sit and talk, I'll listen to you. So you know, it's just a question of recognizing this person as an individual.
How do you envision promoting this committee and its work in the community?
Can you repeat that again, Sam?
Yeah. How do you envision promoting this committee and its work in the community?
Okay. Well, like I mentioned earlier, I always help with the community. I just do it in private. So me doing this, I don't mind being loud. I do not mind going out and talking to that stranger at the bus stop. Hey, you know, we got this happening here. You want to hear about it? This is that simple for me. Well, for me, it seems simple. It takes work when you got to get people to open up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Last question. What else would you like the committee to know about you?
Boy. There's so much I'm involved in. I live in Lincoln City, right? So I ran for mayor, I lost. I'm running for city council right now. So that's kind of my, what I'm doing there for the city. But it still keeps coming back. I read this, how proactive it is to be involved with the community, that I'm hoping that it just kind of spreads further north. Somehow incorporate it. Let's talk with the people out there too. Just talking about it. Like I said, loud. When it comes to helping people, I don't mind at all.
Okay. What's our next step?
Okay, if there's no further questions, which it appears there's not, generally the general process is that if there is a favorable recommendation that a committee member move and supported by a second, and then that's all that's required to move this forward to the mayor.
Okay. Do I hear a motion of support?
Maybe some discussion though, right? Wouldn't that be a part of the process?
Discussion?
Yeah, you can have it. The discussion should come first, and then somebody needs to make a motion and a second to...
Can I ask some questions myself? You guys up for some questions to be asked at you for about this? Okay. I did have some. They're pretty simple. So how long has the longest person been on this committee?
It's a very new committee.
It's a very new committee. We're all the first timers on this.
Okay.
First time of this type of committee.
Very well. So because based on that again is, so if I were to get selected and I want to continue further on beyond, because it's a 1-year term, how does that process go?
So this will be ultimately fulfilling the vacant member's position. And so since this committee just started 4 months ago,
February,
it'll be filling out the term through February.
Okay. I like that it's all really organic. You're just kind of see where it goes. So, and then, so based off these responsibilities, I came up with some questions. So, like for FSS to serve as a liaison between the police department and the community, my question on that was, how often does that actually happen? And does it also include not just the city, but the county and maybe even the state?
Well,
I'm sorry, you said that this is fairly new, so the answer might be short.
In January of 2020, there was a community meeting with Newport Police and Lincoln County Sheriff in this room in council chambers, specifically with the Latinx population to hear concerns, to address concerns, to allay fears, people's, you know, perceptions of law enforcement. It was a very successful meeting. And so when you say, like, we're very new in this development, so when you say how often does it happen, I think it happens more anecdotally. People learn that we are on the committee. People tell us what's going on, what they think of is going on, and we can bring that up here. But I think every individual committee member would have a different answer for, right, like, how often that happens. Okay. And it's still very new. And COVID has really shifted how we engage with folks. Correct. So I think we want to have more of those community dialogues.
We are planning to have a town hall meeting. And of course, now we're fighting this COVID. So, but our goal is to have another town hall meeting, but this time open it to everyone.
Right, okay, well, good.
And then have them come in, and we're gonna hopefully have to go to a bigger room and keep the dialogue open and get the people comfortable. We're all human beings. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's look at each other that way and start talking with each other, and let's solve our community problems together. That's the only way we're gonna be able to do it.
Inclusiveness, like that, for sure. I'll just do one more, because a lot of these were based thinking that this has kind of been going on for a while. So letter A, what was it? So responded to community concerns in a timely manner was one of these responses. How is that, I guess the word is, how is that the triage that happens with that? Who goes to the top and
Where do they land on those?
Well, I think one of the things we've run into is we really haven't faced that yet. And so having each member represents a particular group, like Sam Hurst is a representative for students. And so the goal is that Sam can address the student community more directly than I could. They could then, you know, when they become comfortable with it and know that Sam is the resource, that the student population could come to Sam, and then Sam could bring any of those concerns he has to the community or to the committee, where the committee can then discuss them as a whole and determine, is this an action item? Is this just information? Do we need to do something about it? My goal as the chief is that we'll take information, recommendations, suggestions, things like that from the committee on how it is we're going to fund things, what it is our priorities are going to be. And, you know, our priorities, while they're listed, can constantly shift based on the community need. And the purpose of this is, it's hard for me to determine what the community needs unless it's asked. And having a group of community members has access to the public maybe better than I do.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Well, as you go along with us and all of that, you'll learn quickly what our talking points are. And I encourage every member, if you're asked a question you don't have an answer to, say, I'll get back to you with an answer, or have somebody call you with the answer. Okay?
You're enforcing follow-up.
Correct. That way you don't feel cornered, or you feel you're being embarrassed or whatever. No, that's not it, because the committee doesn't know everything. There may be a very important question to this resident that they feel it's important, so we need to get them an answer.
Well, thank you. Yeah, this sounds like it would be a lot of fun.
We do have a member on the phone that's not here, so I don't know if you want to seek any input or questions from Stu.
Stu, do you have anything?
Yeah, thanks for calling on me. I agree with a lot of your things that you said with regard to diversity into the community. Could you expand upon how you would, if you were a member of the committee, how you would actually put forth the Latino community's concerns for the city of Newport, and how you'd communicate that?
Okay, that's a good question. The name of my interpretation business is Little Shepherd. Right? I'm not a pastor or nothing, but I take that to where I go to them. If they come into me, or if I see that lost lamb, if you will, I go and I talk. So a lot of what I do when I do communicate with the community outside of work is just walking up to them, or they'll come up to me a lot of times. People just, for whatever reason, they'll open up to me. I don't have to try very hard. So it's just a question of listening. And like you said earlier, if I don't have the answer, give me some time and I'll come back to you, or we'll find it together.
Okay, Chairman, I'd like to make a motion that we, as a committee, vote yes for this applicant and send it over to the mayor. Do I have a second?
Second, please.
I second.
I'm not allowed.
Okay, we have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
I just wanted to say, a year ago, I had the opportunity to meet Fernando when we had the COVID outbreak here in the community, and I was asked to set up a call center for Lincoln County. And Fernando had already been in the system in terms of managing contact tracing and getting information to folks as someone who is fluently bilingual. And I just had such joy getting to work with Fernando daily. So I'm really thrilled that you're going to be on this committee if the mayor approves it. But right. Yeah, so anyway,
thank you,
thanks, Fernando.
Thank you, Sam. Thanks, everyone, for having me.
Fernando, thank you for your time. And so what I will do is, based on your recommendation, is I'll write a staff report recommending Fernando to the mayor at the next council meeting.
Cool. All righty. Well, thanks, everyone. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Okay. Have a good evening.
Okay. Do you have anything on the community questionnaire?
I don't think so. I kind of feel like I really dropped the ball on where we were going with it, you know, as far as next steps. Like, I left the meeting, you and I didn't even talk about, okay, what comes next? You know, we have all the edits I talked to Patty about that a little bit. And so I guess, you know, I know that we kind of wanted it done in September, but I think this is going to back us up a little bit. And so maybe the three of us, Patty, Esmeralda, and I could get together and make the edits. I'm just not clear on, you know, process or what to do next, but.
Well, what I'd like to do is get a tentative timeline, which I know we're still on. Our goal was not to have this out prior to September. So the next meeting at the end of September would give us the opportunity to finalize it. That'll also give us time to confirm with city staff through IT and things electronic means of ways that we can put this out and be able to collect the data. And then also maybe I will suggest some ways because not everybody will have access to the electronic means. And we want to ensure we're getting this into, you know, all of the community that maybe we can help or assist Sam in getting the feedback from high school students or our under 18 crowd, you know, things like that. And so I think that would be a great discussion item on September, is I'll have some suggestions, but then also, and then hopefully an answer from city IT on their recommendation or suggestion, or we know that Peggy has a lot of experience with surveys. So we'll definitely tap into that. So unless somebody has a better idea, would be my recommendation, is that it's a great that Melinda and Esmeralda and Patty could work together to finalize your last discussion.
Okay.
And then put out for final document.
You have the notes from last time, right?
I do, and there's a lot in the minutes too. Yeah. And so I think if we put those things together, we can come up with a final version.
They did a fantastic job of condensing everything and put it into a good order, so now we just need to kind of clean it up and then bring it to the committee. Okay, moving on. There's no more public out there, so committee comments. Anybody have anything to say?
The only thing, when I missed last month, so, you know, I was doing reviews and so forth. At one point, we talked about that the police budget was passed and that was going to get out to us. Is that still possible?
We can have Patty consent it to you. It's a link to the city's website. All the information's on there. If you want the whole thing or if you want just the police budget, we can send that. Your choice.
And then are there any other the monthly statistical reviews out there?
I dropped the ball on that one. I will fully admit it. I can have Patty send those to you, the same thing that we send, that we make available, that has our monthly stats, correct?
And in looking at those, I was looking at them a little bit more thoroughly in the last month or so. And if we could go over some of those a little bit more specifically, I think it would at least help me, you know, understand a little bit more. For instance, sexual offenses. You know, what are those exactly? Sure. You know, and some other ones, and that might be helpful.
And I think, Mr. Chair, one of the things I could add is, if any of the committee members have questions in the interim, you know, instead of waiting until the meeting in September, if there's things you want asked or you're concerned about or want clarification on, or hey, I heard this, is send me an email. So I can be prepared and I can try to get you the answer, you know, and give it to the whole committee. So feel free to answer, and I'll answer just about anything. And if I can't, for whatever reason, I'll tell you why.
And the last note that I had was, in the resolution 3905B talks about, you know, committee members learning about practices, protocols, procedures, policies. Is there some way we can develop a way that we can go through some of that stuff maybe on a monthly basis, you know, take whether it's a policy, whether it's a procedure, protocol, you know, and kind of just kind of review that, you know, on each month. Again, I think it, at least with me, it would help me to kind of understand more how the police department is working.
Can I ask a question? Do you mean like all the laws of Oregon? What do you mean?
No.
Because that's a lot.
Okay. Use of force.
Okay.
You know, I'm assuming there's a protocol,
correct,
you know, with the Newport Police Department that would deal with use of force, those types of things. No, not Oregon laws, more protocols that the city uses.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that we could do is, because again, I mean, our policy manual is 700 pages.
Well, I realize.
Some of it is kind of boring to look at, but you know, and a lot of it is working documents that are constantly changing. We had a lot of, due to legislation, you know, there were 16 legislative reform bills in the Oregon legislation this year. And a lot of those change the way we do things. And so, you know, that may be a good place to start. Early on, I think we hit the five big ones that came out at a federal level. What may be beneficial is, because one of the things I know we wanted to do was really focus on the community survey. And I know the group has a lot of things to do. And I have a lot of great ideas that I'd like to be able to discuss and bounce off you. But we don't want to overwhelm the group and talk about too many things at once and then not move forward with anything. So one of the things that could be beneficial is just really providing you our table of contents at the next meeting, and then you guys deciding that we'd like more information on these ones, and can come up ultimately with a plan over the next few meetings to all give a presentation on this one, then this one, and that may be a little easier than me just randomly picking a policy and explaining it.
Good idea.
And then you saying, that's not the one I wanted to hear about, so.
Well, since we're in the process of hiring and stuff, maybe Tom or another FTO field training officer can come in and say, okay, once they're hired, this is where we start.
Right.
So they can see the length and, you know, the academy, then the in-house academy they have to go through to understand. So if we, the committee, understand everything they've been trained, because I get offended when people say, oh, this Podunk town, their officers aren't trained. Yes, they are. They're very trained. They have to go through a lot. So if we understand what they have to go through, then it makes our job a little bit easier when we're talking to people.
So we'll make sure we'll send that out with the next minutes, and you can have, you'll look at it a few days ahead of time, and if we could have just a quick discussion on what you'd like to see for the next one, and we'll go from there.
Stu, since I can't see you on the TV, do you have any comments before we adjourn?
Thanks. It's been a great meeting. I really enjoyed the sheriff's presentation. Boy, what a great guy we got tackling that very hard, hard issue. So I just want to say, no, let's go and enjoy our families now.
Okay. Have a good rest of the evening there, Stu, and the rest of you on the committee. Thank you so much for all that you have done so far for helping us move this forward. Okay, we're adjourned at 7:26.
Thank you.
Okay.
We're done.
Oof.
That officer that was here last week was a really smart guy. I liked him.
Who left him?
What was his name?
It was
Gaynor.
Oh, I won't tell him that. Go right to his head. He's our number two. So he's right below me in the team.
Thank you. Yeah. Kara didn't remember me, but I remember her. Okay, let's do some.